Welcome back for part two of our two-part episode here at the NBA podcast presented by B-Ball Breakdown. We're going to start by delving into the MVP balloting, which came out Tuesday, and then we will talk about the Executive of the Year race, which came out Monday. Stephen Curry is the first unanimous MVP in NBA history. I think we can agree that that was well-deserved.
No.
Yeah. So there were some interesting results down ballot a little bit. Kawhi, as we mentioned earlier, finished second. LeBron was third, I think only a couple votes behind Kawhi. Russ was fourth. KD was fifth. James Harden got a third place vote, so I'd like that voter to have his credentials rescinded, because that is egregious. But I want to briefly talk about Kawhi LeBron and where you fall on that. Do you think Kawhi was a deserving number two, or should LeBron have been ahead of him?
No, Kawhi was a deserving number two.
Wow. Okay.
I definitely have him up there. LeBron no longer cares about the regular season all that much, which is completely fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, completely fine. But it comes with the consequence that then he shouldn't be taking that serious in the MVP voting. And I think Kawhi just had the better regular season, and the MVP is still a regular season award, and you need to take account of that. He was the defensive player of the year. He was a driving force behind a 67-win team. He started creating shots like he was Kobe, and he did so efficiently. LeBron is great and all, but this season, Kawhi just played better. I mean, LeBron even lost his shooting touch.
Yeah.
Like, his three ball went down the toilet.
That's true.
So I think it's completely fair to put him behind Kawhi. So LeBron was three?
Yeah.
You know what? I would put him fifth.
Wow. Okay.
Come on. Okay, what's your argument for LeBron over KD and Russ, though?
I think without LeBron, the Cavs don't even make the playoffs. Or maybe they're a first-round team, and that's it.
Okay, so you're taking the MVP literal.
Yeah.
Like, the most value. Okay.
Right.
You know what? If we do that, then I agree. It's just, I miss like the description of what the award actually is, but
right.
At times it's like a popularity contest.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the best player, sometimes it's the most valuable. Like, what the hell is it?
Yeah.
Like, if it's the most valuable, okay, fair enough. Then I get your point, I agree. Then he should probably be third, because I still think Kawhi is more valuable overall. But he wouldn't be more. Kawhi and Russ wouldn't be more valuable in that sense over LeBron. But in terms of better player and what they did in the regular season, I have LeBron fifth.
Okay.
Because I don't think he was as impressive as the remaining four. What is in that award, really?
Yeah, I think that's part of the problem, is that no one knows. So I think, Steph was the unanimous MVP because he had a historic season, 30 points, 50, 45, 90 shooting, 73-win team. Like, there is no denying best player, most valuable player. Like, the team is still good without him, but not historically good. That was easy. I think from there it's so subjective that you can't say, it's best player or the player who adds the most value to his team. I think the thing for LeBron with me is that you're right in that he's giving more effort now in the playoffs than he did during the regular season. He has a tendency recently to kind of loaf on defense sometimes, or he picked up this thing from Dwayne Wade where if he doesn't get a call that goes his way, he just sits on the other end and complains to the refs and makes his team play 4-on-5. That said, he's still LeBron James. Like, he's still so good. He's still so good. And I think he spoiled us for so long by being so much better than every other player that now he has actual challengers, and we're comparing him to his past heights. And he is not the player he was even 2 or 3 years ago. He's lost maybe 5%. But still, LeBron James at 95%. I mean, I honestly would have had him second. I would have had him above Kawhi on my ballot. So it's tough. I mean, any of those five guys are all deserving, being Curry, Kawhi, LeBron, KD, and Russ. Like, I think you almost have to have those five guys in some order. as your top five. And this is all, you know, it's so subjective. Like, all of these guys are deserving. But I just think we can't let LeBron's past heights spoil us. And we can't use that as a reason to ding him a little bit here.
You know what? I'm looking at his numbers right now, and I'm going to concede something here because he actually had better advanced numbers than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
He had a higher PER this year compared to last year, even a higher true shooting percentage. His win shares were up, also per 48 minutes. His assist rate was a little down, but not up by a whole lot. His rebounding rate was up. It's just weird because I saw a lot of Cavs games, and I did check the numbers like sporadically, but he just didn't seem like he had the same impact. It seemed like he was coasting a lot more and just really didn't care. But maybe that's a part of the leadership curve that he's taking on, like getting shots to a lot of others. And then you need to take into account that mental factor of him growing as a leader. I can appreciate that.
Yeah,
I can appreciate that. I think what then threw me off was the fact that he's indirectly got, or maybe not indirectly, got David Blatt fired.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Who was 30 and 11.
Right.
Like, don't argue with results, LeBron.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'll admit, I think the personality factor maybe have gotten to me.
Yeah.
I think that's, I don't view him necessarily as this terrific leader. Mm-hmm. I view him as a frat boy at times who just likes to hang out with his pals and do weird stuff.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a concern, and I have a hard time taking him seriously at times, especially when you force out a coach like that.
Yeah.
But I'll concede that he actually had better numbers than I thought he had. This is tough, right? I mean, no, I don't think I'm stepping off my claim. I still think that Kawhi was above him.
That's fair.
I also think KD is above him, but I'm now sitting here thinking maybe Russ isn't.
Okay. So you'd have him fourth now.
Yeah, I might actually move him up one spot. You've nudged me a little bit.
That's good. That's all I wanted.
Yeah, but I think KD, though, I think he's grown really underrated.
Yeah, oh, he totally has. And he reminded us of that in Game 4 against the Spurs by annihilating one of the best teams we've ever seen single-handedly.
But you really touched upon it earlier. You said KD wasn't a bad defender by any means.
Yeah.
And you're right. He isn't. He's long. He knows how to hedge also. And he can cover smaller guys at times. He can even go in and play some post-D sometimes because of his long wingspan. But the fact that he is such an overall deadly scorer and can score from every single space on the floor. I mean, he's ridiculous. He's Stephen Curry ridiculous when he's really on.
Yeah.
And that's really what has me bothered a little bit in regards to LeBron, because you know you can sack off of him. Yeah, he'll overpower you at the rim, but he still telegraphs his moves a little bit. Durant is more well-rounded as a scorer, and I don't think the drop-off in defense is all that significant. I fear Kevin Durant more than I do LeBron at this stage.
Interesting.
I think a lot of people are stuck on the LeBron used to do, you know, really ridiculous things, and he still does, but not to the same extent as earlier, as you also touched upon.
Yeah.
Whereas Durant now is doing it more and more and more, and I'm not talking about like these wild scoring outbursts. I'm just talking about controlling a basketball game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you made a good point about LeBron forgetting how to shoot three-pointers. Like, that's certainly...
Yeah, like, what happened?
Yeah, well, he found it in the playoffs, so it's not, not a huge concern. But it is a fair point that definitely constricted his ability to impact the game on every level. I just think, as a passer, I mean, no one can do what he does.
That's right.
I mean, so that's just such a unique characteristic, and the Cavs have really built themselves around that, you know? Budenholzer said, I think between games 3 and 4, he's just like, I don't know what to do. They have so much spacing with Kyrie and J.R. Smith and Kevin Love and Channing Frye. Like, you just put four spacers around James, let him run the offense, and you get 25 threes in a game. So I think that passing ability really separates him still. And even though he's, you know, slightly less potent as a scorer and as a shooter, his ability to impact the game on every level is it's still unparalleled. Draymond Green is close, but LeBron is still LeBron.
I agree, but I also this is where I think Durant has become underrated because he still averages 5 assists a game.
Yeah, he has definitely improved as a passer in the past couple of years. So he,
yeah, I mean, in his MVP campaign, he was at 5.5.
Yeah, yeah.
And no, you know, it got some national attention for a bit.
Right.
But then it went away. With LeBron, it's been a theme throughout the course of his career, and it's kind of unfair to KD that ESPN isn't really giving him the coverage in regards to his improved passing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, you know, I'm biased because I think some channels do have a tendency to put extra focus on players, specific players.
Right.
Like, okay, let's just call it like it is. ESPN had the Heat Index
in
2010, right? Yeah. So, you know, they're pre-positioned to maybe overrate certain aspects of a player and maybe put... I don't want to say they try to put other people down, but it does seem like they try to, like, lift someone up a little bit more.
Yeah.
I don't ever think Kevin Durant has received the respect or the acknowledgement of his improved, not only passing, but also rebounding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hell, this year he was 28, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists.
Yeah.
That's a wicked-ass line.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet, like, the cover, you know, the what you cover on KD is like, oh, he can shoot, he can score, he's a tremendous scorer.
Right.
Well, yeah, but he's more than that. Stop. I mean... No one's talking about his defense, his rebounding, passing, the fact that he steals one, also has a block, gets to the... Yeah, okay, getting to the lines, people do talk about that, but still, it's like they package him as a scorer. And then LeBron is this all-around player who does more things. Well, that's a flawed way of doing things.
Yeah.
That's not reality.
Right, yeah.
So both are all-around players. LeBron is a better all-around player, yeah.
Yeah.
But then you can argue, is the gap in offensive capabilities that small? I wouldn't argue that... I don't think it's small. I think Durant is clearly the better offensive player.
Yeah. Yeah, I think... I mean, one point on the assist is that even though he has 5 assists a game, I think the type of assists might be a little different. You know, like LeBron just has the ability to thread the needle between three dudes. Like he has like such unreal vision.
Oh, he's magic.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm a little reluctant just to go by basic box score numbers in terms of their assists because I don't think it really captures what each player brings. That said, you're totally right. Like KD is a very underrated passer. He's gotten much better in that regard. And deserves credit for that. So, you know, all of this is very nitpicky. All of these dudes are incredible. We'd want any of them on our team.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But I did want to just touch on that because, you know, the MVP voters didn't allow us to debate the number one player, thankfully.
Oh, no.
One award that is a little more controversial, and we talked about this before we even started recording, and it sounds like we disagree a little bit, is Executive of the Year. So R.C. Buford got the award for the Spurs. You know, he signed LaMarcus Aldridge and worked the cap to ensure that he had enough room to get Aldridge, keep Kawhi happy, and get him to a max deal, sign David West for a veteran minimum. Neil Olshey of the Blazers finished second. And really, he's the guy. You know, we had our email chain yesterday on Hardwood Paroxysm almost got into a civil war over the Executive of the Year votes because...
Oh, Marvel plug.
Yeah.
Marvel plug alert.
Yeah, because, you know, some people were saying, you know, Olshey, like, he lost 4/5 of his starting lineup and this team is in the second round of the playoffs giving the Dubs a scare. Like, that's incredible. And
it is.
And the way he went about retooling his roster. Like, I wrote a piece for bballbreakdown.com last July after the dust had settled and they had signed Davis and Aminu and they had traded for Mason Plumlee and they had sent Batum out for Noah Vonleh. Can't remember if they had done the Mo Harkless deal yet, but that was another thing. Like, he just executed this really smart set of moves where he said, I've got Dame. He's this guy in his mid-20s. I want to get guys on that same developmental curve. So I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to sign Ben Gordon. I'm not going to freak out and get these guys in their 30s. Like, you know, I'm not going to get a Kirk Heinrich to just kind of keep us afloat. Like, I want to get guys signed to long-term deals who can grow alongside Dame, who can grow alongside CJ, who can grow alongside Alan Crabb, you know, some of my younger homegrown talents. So that was the feather in his cap. Now, some people were arguing, well, you know, Portland was expected to win 30 games this year. Like, they were expected to be at the bottom of the West. So didn't he basically win because they surpassed expectations? And if that's the case, isn't that more of a credit to Terry Stotts, the head coach, and to the players themselves? Which is...
Oh, that's ridiculous. No. He deserves credit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm of the camp where what he did, it doesn't... I agree that if they win 30 games, he's not going to be second, or he's definitely not going to win Executive of the Year, but he's probably not even going to be second.
Yeah.
I think he just, you know, I'm so impressed with the way they rebuilt, that results be damned. Like, I love that approach of, we have our guy, so let's build around him, short-term win-loss results be damned. And if it works out like it did for Portland this year, that's great. But I don't think they really, you know, they, LaMarcus went to the Spurs and Olshi came out afterwards and said, look, like, we had a chance to re-sign Wes Matthews and Robin Lopez, but we told their agents very on in free agency, you're basically a package deal with LaMarcus. Like, if he leaves, we're not going to try to re-sign you. Like, they could have, there was nothing preventing them from trying to re-sign Wes and Rolo even without LaMarcus, and you bring back the meat of a 50-win team and see what happens. I like the courage of Olshi to say, you know what, that had run its course, let's go with this new approach where we get rid of our older guys, build in like one of the youngest rosters in the NBA, and see what happens. So, you know, I personally would have had Olshi as number one, but I know you are in a different camp and you think Buford was the guy.
Yeah, well, we may not disagree all that much, it seems, because I agree with everything you just said. And I also agree that Olshi should be second, by the way.
Okay.
But that's because you focus on... You said results be damned.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. I totally get that. I'm just not in that same camp. And that's why I have Buford. Because he spent the last 4 years playing this up, and he got LaMarcus freaking Aldridge. And you have to appreciate... A team like the Spurs, that is all about sharing responsibility, going out and getting a star player of this magnitude. Because let's be honest for a second. NBA players have huge egos, especially high volume players. Yeah. They do. It's just a common fact. And to buy into, to convince a guy to buy into a concept about sharing and not being selfish and making the extra pass, making the correct reads, and basically reschooling your play to fit the greater nature of the team, that takes some convincing. And I know Greg Popovich had a role in this, but that wouldn't have been able... he wouldn't even have been able to present anything had it not been for RC Buford.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think when you convince a guy of that magnitude to actually... be open to changing his game to suit the betterment of their team, that's huge. And especially like a guy of that volume, like LaMarcus freaking Aldridge. This wasn't some seldom used forward that the Spurs just dusted with magic Spurs whatever and then turned them into a star like they usually do. This was an established star that they somehow convinced to get on board. And if they do the same to Kevin Durant this summer, wow.
Yeah.
I think they opened something here. I think they opened a door they had not opened before. Getting established guys in and making them believe in a system that is already established on its own merits. And if RC Buford, which I think he's the one who's laying the groundwork for this, if he's the guy at the helm doing this, then hell yeah, he deserves to win.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I would give him credit for is having the foresight to not sign Kawhi to an extension right away, because that kept his low cap hold on the books. As you said, we'll have a separate talk about cap holds later. But it kept the option open to sign that type of max level free agent and then give Kawhi the money he very rightfully deserves. But it really, you're right, it opened the door for a very non-San Antonio-esque way of team building, or one that we haven't seen in this Duncan era. So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to take away from Buford. I think that specifically was brilliant, and that shows years of foresight, because he knows.
And Danny Green, by the way.
Yeah, oh, that's a good point. Oh, right, yeah.
4 years, 40 million.
Yeah. I mean,
what other GM could keep him in the fold for 4 years, 40 million?
Right. Yeah. I mean, part of me wonders how much of that is like, I guess he's probably the one who's proposing these contract terms. So, you know, that is part of it. But how much is it like, hey, Danny, you have won a title with us. Like, we saved you. We saved your NBA career. You were in the scrap heap. Cleveland had waived you and we brought you in. We turned you into a major contributor. You stay here. You know you're going to have a chance to win 50-plus games every year. You know your role. I just don't know how much convincing he has to do, even with...
Are you arguing that he played the blame game and that somehow worked? That's a good thing. If the blame game works, then that's all that matters. That's
true. I mean, I think the...
yeah, I get what you're saying.
The Aldridge stuff, I mean, it is worth noting that he wasn't by any means guaranteed to sign in San Antonio, and they actually had to put up a pretty good fight against Phoenix, who brought in they brought in Tyson Chandler just to sign LaMarcus, and then that backfired.
Hey, we got you Tyson Chandler. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's nothing.
33-year-old Tyson Chandler. Yeah. So that, I mean, I don't want to take credit away for Buford what he did, but yeah, this just feels like, you know, he got rewarded for doing less than what Olshi did.
Now, see, that I can agree with. That I can agree with the volume of work. Totally. Yeah. I just think the preparation and the magnitude, the fruit bearing of what the planning really did is what makes this a clear Buford win. But I totally get what you're saying, and I agree that he did not put in the same work as Olsen.
Yeah, that's
fair. I mean, that's fair, but could we agree on something? At least they came in 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And at least Neil wasn't down in the fifth sixth area.
Yeah, that would have been atrocious.
Yeah. But I do, where did Danny Ainge land?
I think he was fifth or sixth. I don't remember exactly where.
That I have a problem with.
Yeah. Well, Jay Crowder was the one. Deal. Yeah. But Isaiah was last year.
I know, but that wasn't even him. Yeah. So, but he did trade for that contract.
Right.
But I just like the fact that the position he put himself in.
Okay.
The fact that Boston was his playoff team as well. I mean, Danny has created I've said this a million times, and I'm sorry, listeners, I'm going to say it again. The Boston Celtics have the best salary structure in the NBA right now. They just do in terms of veterans. And it's just, you got to give him credit for it. I for sure would have put Danny at 3.
Yeah, I don't remember who finished 3rd, 4th. I think the one that I wanted to touch on briefly was Sam Hinkie, who actually, he got 1 second place vote and 2 third place votes. Which I thought was, I can understand why he did it or why other executives voted for him, but it's weird because he only got 1 second place vote last year. And so last year he traded MCW, who I think everyone can agree is not a good basketball player, for a Lakers pick that could be number 4 this year. He traded Thad Young's expiring contract for a Miami pick that finished 1 spot out of number 11 last year, which would have been, could have been Miles Turner, could have been Devin Booker, could have been Cameron Payne. Traded for JaVale, or he acquired JaVale McGee to get OKC's first round pick. That was also pretty close to conveying last year. I think the KD thing, that really knocked any chance of it conveying out. But like all of these moves had a chance of landing 4 first round picks last year. 3 of them pushed back, whatever. But they, I mean,
delayed reaction.
Yeah, but they like
we talked about.
They still could have a big payoff down the line. I mean, the KJ McDaniels handling of that wasn't ideal, but he basically he traded on draft night. He picked Elfrid Payton 10th, and then immediately traded him to Orlando for number 12 pick, which was Dario Saric. And then also got the first rounder back that Philly traded in the Andrew Bynum deal. So he got a first round pick for moving down 2 spots, which is absurd, especially because of how, I mean, that 2017 first round pick from Philly, like, look at this team right now. They're, you know, they're guaranteed the top 4 pick this year. Like, that's probably going to be a top 10 pick next year. So he got he got a free top 10 pick back to move down 2 spots and probably take the guy that he was targeting anyway. So basically, last year was like a freaking masterclass in GMing, like just totally savaging, like just taking advantage of teams that are undervaluing future assets. He picked up a bunch of second round picks for like Brandon Davies and like just random terrible players. This year, he did the Sacramento Kings thing where he just, you know, took advantage of Vlade not knowing what the salary cap is and what pick swaps are. And that
still cracks me up, though.
Like, that was great. That was awesome. He deserves props for that. Aside from that, he takes Jahlil Okafor instead of Kristaps Porzingis. You know, we can debate over whether that was his choice or management, but, you know, obviously doesn't look like a great decision right now. And that's it. Like, he didn't do anything else. In fact, he actually traded 2 second-round picks on Christmas Eve to get Ish Smith back after not re-signing him. Like, he completely failed to address the point guard situation and thought, like, Kendall Marshall coming off a torn ACL was the solution. So, like, compared to his 2014-2015 campaign, where he did a lot and, like, set the franchise up really well for the future, he didn't do all that much this year. So, I'm a little confused as to how he got more votes this year than he did last year. Part of me thinks that, I mean, he resigned that first week of April, so I don't know when these executive votes are due. I'm guessing up until the last day of the season, so maybe these third-place votes were just like a show of confidence. Like, you know what? You were right. Your process did make sense. Like, the Sixers ownership did you wrong, and we're going to show our support. Good job, Sam. Like, you're going to get another job in the NBA soon. So maybe that was it. You know, I just needed to get that off my chest because I love it. Like, I think it's a perfect FU to Jerry Colangelo that this guy got executive of the year votes and then stepped down because you wanted to remove all his power. So that's great. But yeah, it's just opened my eyes a little bit, especially when I went back and looked last year at the voting results.
Well, you basically just stole my point. This is a Kobe Bryant MVP situation.
Yeah.
Just a delayed reaction. I don't think anyone, and myself included, understood what he was trying to do 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So he was looked at as this Dr. Frankenstein maniac, and now it became clear.
Yeah.
It really became clear. And I also think people, myself included, once more, were lost in this idea that he was building a losing culture because, okay, you know, he wasn't the one building the losing culture, but a losing culture was established because of what he was doing.
Right.
And a lot of people thought that was a bad thing. And I remember specifically really hating that aspect of the way he rebuilt. So I may have put a bit more emphasis on that part instead of looking at the gathering of assets, which I should have. And a lot of people should have. And now, as I've evolved, apparently, and others as well, we've seen now that what he was doing was the right thing. He was gathering assets, a boatload of them, and just waiting to cash in. You made a very, very good point a couple podcasts ago that he may have been waited 1 year too many.
Yeah.
Like before cashing in.
Yeah.
You could have argued that he should have cashed in last year instead of just continued compiling assets.
Yeah.
And that's a good point. I think he would have done very well. And I even think the Sixers could have been a playoff team this year if he had cashed in all his chips.
Yeah, I think the bad luck in terms of the lottery picks not conveying, coupled with Joel Embiid having a second foot surgery. I think that all just pushed the timeline back. But the thing that's going to drive me absolutely up a freaking wall this summer is when they start signing guys, and it's already happening with Dario Saric. Like, one nameless Philly columnist has already said, like, oh, well, if he comes over, it's because they changed the karma of the team. Like, that's so stupid. It's so unbelievably. They were, no matter who was in charge, Sam Hinkie, Brian Colangelo, me, like, it does not matter. They were going to make strides this offseason. They were going to go in free agency for the first time. They were going to have three first-round picks, maybe two top five picks, depending on how the lottery goes. Like, they were going to get better no matter what. So, like, it's going to drive me up a wall when Brian Colangelo gets credit for this, the foundation that Hinkie laid. Like, I, to your point about the asset gathering, like, everyone who crapped on him needs to remember what he inherited. Like, they traded away Iguodala, Vucevic, Harkless, and a first-round pick for Andrew Bynum, who never played a game with the team. So they gave away four valuable assets. Harkless was like, he was a mid-first-round pick at the time. You could argue that he wasn't that valuable, like, heading into this year, but now seeing him in Portland, like, he's a good player. He's not going to change your franchise, but he's like, he is a piece. He is a valuable piece.
Well, and he had value. Yeah. He had value because he was a first-round pick, so he was a cheap contract for four years. Just that fact alone, especially at that point in time, because the uncertainty of the salary cap at that point in time made him valuable. Right. So I think it's totally fair to call him a valuable
piece. So giving away those four guys for nothing, like, that depletes your franchise. So Hinkie undid the damage of that in 2 years, which is 3 years faster than anyone could have feasibly expected. Like, that Bynum trade blowing up should have set the franchise back a full half decade. So I feel like he's being blamed for the crimes of his predecessors, which, and I shouldn't even say crimes, because, like, that Bynum trade was defensible if it worked out. But it just drives me nuts. Like, anyone who criticizes him for his overall vision, like, his execution, fine. Like, you can make gripes about it. Like, even the craziest Sixers fans are like, yeah, maybe we should have signed a point guard. Like, Kendall Marshall's not so great. Tony Roten, probably not your best starting point guard option. But you can't, like, trifle with his overall vision when you take into account what he inherited and now what he left the team with. Like,
damn it, Obama. Yeah. This is a damn it, Obama situation,
It really is. It really is.
He had to clean up after Bush.
Yeah, exactly.
And now... He's moving on, and Donald Trump is potentially, or Hillary Clinton is coming in, and that's not great by any means.
Right, exactly.
that's the Sixers. The Sixers are the U.S. presidential election.
That sounds right. Except we're not as embarrassing as the Sixers are.
Oh, that's
but in 6 months' time, we very well could be.
No, I you know what? I think the league is gonna wise up. Not just to Sam Hinkie, but also to the fact that the display of nepotism with the Colangelos and the fact that if they fail again, and I'm going to say they, even though Brian is in charge, because you just know his pops is going to be involved somehow.
Oh, for sure. Zero question.
They've never won a championship. And, I mean, Andrea Bargnani was apparently a good decision. Trading for Rudy Gay was apparently a good decision. So when Brian was in Toronto, and I am really questioning that kind of decision making. And if they become the laughing stock of the league again, at least Hinkie will get some level of redemption.
Yeah.
You as a Sixers fan might, you know, blow your brains out, but at least Hinkie will get some redemption.
Yeah, he's going to get another job. And these votes show that, you know,
please be Chicago. Please be Chicago. I mean, Sam Hinkie, come to Chicago. Just take Gar and just wipe him out the door. Throw some donuts out there. He'll go chase him.
And on that depressing note, I think we're going to wrap up here. Well, that'll do it for our special two-part episode of the NBA podcast presented by B-Ball Breakdown. As always, be sure to check out bballbreakdown.com for all of your playoff action. You can get game recaps of every game. We'll have series recaps coming out soon, series previews for the conference finals. Until then, Morton, it's always a pleasure.
Oh, likewise, Bri. It's been fun.
Take care.